We are starting, though, with a story with details that some might find disturbing, and it has to do with the sentencing decision that was made in a BC courtroom. This was a man who was convicted of killing his girlfriend. In fact, he stabbed her 15 times at Metro Town. But the sentence, while it might seem, I don't know that any sentence you would say would fit that crime, but while the sentence is in line with what you would see in a murder case, he actually got a bit of a lighter sentence, and it's because of something called the Impact of Race and Culture Assessment, or the IRCA. And joining us to talk about what this actually is and how this works in the court system is Rob Danu. Rob Danu is a former federal Crown prosecutor, criminal defense lawyer, and co-founder of the Danu Dhaliwal Law Group. Rob Danu, thank you for coming back on the show.
Happy Friday, Jill. Good to be here.
Well, thank you again for doing this. This was a very, very disturbing case when we first heard about this murder. We know that the individual involved, he was sentenced to life in prison. He did receive that second-degree murder conviction and sentence. However, the sentencing actually turned out to be a bit lighter, again, because of this IRCA, or Impact of Race and Culture Assessment. Can we start there? What exactly is an IRCA?
So an IRCA report is somewhat like what we are more familiar with called Gladue reports. So they're primarily used in Canada for black offenders, however, and they focus on past trauma, impact on decision-making, and why these individuals would have engaged in criminality based upon poverty, discrimination, marginalization, and other factors.
And are they put forward then in cases where do you have to prove that there was the things that you just mentioned, that there was this hardship maybe in this person's past? And how does that kind of play out?
It's quite interesting, actually, and this has generated a lot of discussion, this Downey case, in terms of, you know, do these reports lead to reverse discrimination? Is it a two-tiered justice system? Is this giving you a free pass? And we're not very familiar with these reports in British Columbia because over 90% of them are actually used in Ontario and Nova Scotia. So it's something relatively new here because of generally we don't have a huge black population in British Columbia. So in terms of the purpose of these reports, they really have two purposes. The first is to enable judges to understand the background of the accused so they can determine, you know, what type of moral culpability this person has. And this is where the judge would look at, you know, what type of racism, discrimination this person faced in the past. And in many ways, it's exactly what a defense lawyer would do in the exact same situation. They would explain the background of their client, present evidence about past trauma, addiction, mental health, to tell the judge, you know, why this person did what they did. And so the judge could make an informed decision about what an appropriate sentence is. The second real purpose for these reports is to connect offenders with culturally reflective social services. So to try to address the root cause of why they're doing what they're doing, which means, you know, sending them to the proper education sources, resources, housing. And the IRCA reports are quite good at giving the background of an offender, but they're not as good as connecting. Well, the report itself is good at connecting the offender to resources. The problem is, do those resources actually exist? And this is where an IRCA report can fall short.
So in this case as well, and I think the reason that this case continues to get a lot of attention, and again, these details will be disturbing to people, this was a case where this 35-year-old man, Everton Downey, stabbed his then-girlfriend, Melissa Blimke, 15 times. It happened at a Metro Town shopping center stairwell. It happened back in 2021. He then left. He later turned himself into police. And again, as we mentioned, he was convicted of second-degree murder, sentenced to life, or sentenced last month to life in prison. But again, because of this report, the sentence was lighter when it deals with parole. Does it mean that because of someone's background, can you really connect what happens in someone's background to someone committing murder? I mean, isn't it, if you commit murder, is that not a crime for whoever does it, regardless of what your background was like?
Well, absolutely it is. It is a crime, but let's just make this more basic. So let's talk about two people who steal bread, just to really get down to a very basic type of hypothetical. So you have one person who's had a normal, happy upbringing. They can afford for the bread, but they just steal it for no apparent reason. The second person has a history of abuse. They are, because of that abuse, addicted. They've gone into, suffering from poverty. They have no money. They're hungry, and they steal the bread. So what the court is trying to do is trying to assess, well, which person is more morally culpable? the first person, you don't really have a real reason as to why they're stealing the bread, so they may receive a more harsh sentence. The second person, you can contextualize or understand why they're stealing the bread, so the judge has to consider that in terms of what an appropriate sentence is in terms of their moral culpability. And murder, unfortunately, is the same. No sentence seems enough for a murder, especially a murder that was as heinous as what we have here. This was an absolutely tragic and terrible action. But the judge's job is still to take a look at all the factors to determine, you know, how morally culpable is this accused, what type of sentence they should receive.
So the court documents, though, in this case, that go into some details of this report, and this was a report, it was done by a social worker. It talks about the accused saying he is a black man who grew up in Toronto. It said that he did not experience overt racism in his early life, but that he did have experienced some racism. When he moved to BC later on in life, in 2016, he felt adrift. There was a much smaller black population, and he did experience racism at that point. How much of a factor, or is that what really weighs in when the judge is making the sentencing decision?
Well, it is a factor the judge has to consider, but what we have to understand, what's really important, is that the judge cannot impose a sentence that's otherwise unfit or outside of the normal range because of those background factors. So the judge can consider it in terms of what's a fit sentence, but the judge cannot go completely out of the ballpark and impose a sentence that would not be fit or not be normal for a situation of this nature. So in terms of the Downey case itself, this is a conviction for second-degree murder. He received a life sentence. The only difference in the Crown and the defense's position was actually quite small. So the defense was asking for a 12-year period of parole eligibility, and the Crown was asking 13 to 15 years. So really there's a difference of 1 year. The judge ultimately imposed a 12-year period. So that sentence, based upon all the cases that the defense and the Crown put forward, was within the normal range. So the judge did not go outside of the normal range for this type of offense.
Are there cases where that does happen, where a judge will look at this and is able to go outside the normal range?
Those cases are exceptional, and they could be an error in law. So if the judge goes outside what's normal based upon factors such as IRCA factors, the Crown could appeal that and say, well, look, this is outside of the range of those factors, were given too much weight, and the judge imposed a lighter sentence than they should have.
And Rob, I'm curious as well, when we talk about this IRCA, as you called it, it's the Impact of Race and Culture Assessment. So is this only used on people who are identified as visible minorities, or is it for everybody?
No, so it's a racialized, so yeah, it is for visible minorities or racialized Canadians, individuals who can show that their racialization has had an impact on their behavior.
And so there isn't kind of the same thing if somebody is not a minority, but also perhaps had an extremely troubled childhood, troubled upbringing?
Well, it is the same thing. So this is where I go back to. This is the normal submissions that defense counsel make. So whether your client is a Canadian who's white and born in Canada or a racialized Canadian, you'd be bringing the same background factors before the court to show, well, look, this individual suffered trauma, or he has addiction issues and mental health issues, and the court should consider that in imposing a just sentence. The only difference is that these reports are, they're expert reports. They go deeper and delve deeper into what those background factors are and how systemic racism could have had an impact on the behavior. But the judge would consider background factors regardless of race, color, or creed.
Are these important tools, do you think? Like you said, we don't hear about them as much in BC, especially the IRCA reports. But are these important? Are these necessary tools for the courts?
Well, they're extremely important. So some context is important here. So we have these IRCA reports because black Canadians are overrepresented at all levels in the justice system. So they're four times more likely to be charged by police. In federal prisons, they represent 8% of the population, but only 3.5% of the population in Canada. In Ontario, where there's a large black population, they are 5% of the adult population in Ontario, but they're 14% of the people in custody. So the purpose of these reports is supposed to be to try to reduce that level of crime and thereby protect the public. So it's not just to give people a free pass, but the courts are trying to analyze, you know, why are these people overrepresented and how can we assist so that there's less crime and the public is safer?
Rob Daniel, we will leave it there for today. As always, thank you for coming on to explain the legal part of this. Appreciate you making the time.
My pleasure.
Rob Danu is a former federal Crown prosecutor, also a criminal defense lawyer and co-founder of the Danu Dhaliwal Law Group.